wonder if between you and Brian.
It's recorded. So between the two of us, we've got this going. Greetings. Thank you guys for coming out to this 3 o'clock session. So we're going to find, or 2 o'clock, we're going to find out how the, is it stuffy in here, you guys?
Stuffy in every one of these rooms.
You just ran up the stairs.
Okay. I'm feeling like I could be asleep in about 10 minutes, maybe less. So this better be good. Okay?
We're going to do our best.
Seriously, I'll step out here in a second. I will see if we can get some air flowing in here. But so glad that each one of you have come and just expressing an interest in our DSOM. I know that many of you have taught for us and really excited about what is on the immediate horizon for our DSOM, because we're making really a major shift in the month of August. One of the things that I wanted to let you guys know is I've had more than one of you have asked me about are you still on the docket to teach? And the answer to all of you here for being here today is yes. I will, we'll have kind of a roll call of who's here today. And I really respect that you guys would come just to learn a little bit more about what we're looking for in our teachers. But one of the things we did is for budget purposes, we rolled back the amount of teachers we were using. You guys would know, we only do a $200 stipend for you when you teach. We know that your time and preparation, well, your class time is worth more than $200, and I know that you prepare coming to the class. So I do sincerely just express my appreciation, thanks to each one of you for investing in our DSOM and being accepting of a $200 honorarium. I was killing the budget by back when we had just three locations. I was always trying to put live teachers in each of those three locations. And in doing so, was just coming in under budget. So we rolled it back to the three teachers and then broadcast to the other locations. Bradley Williamson, he's our pastor at Friendship Assembly of God, and Bradley helps us with the IT side of what happens with DSOM. Now, just recently, what month did we make the change from GoToMeeting to Zoom? Like a few months ago.
Year, yeah.
And so in making that's been a real blessing. But I don't want to sit here and talk about things that I've asked these guys to talk about. We've got till 3 o'clock, and I've got Phil Steiger, pastors Living Hope Church. My son Ryan is an associate pastor with Phil. Together, the three guys with myself really comprise the steering committee, if you will, for DSOM. The four of us figure things out. I've got one person in each of our locations to help serve as a point person, but there's three different components we wanted to talk about here today. And so I want to, without any further ado, I want to turn it to Phil and ask Phil if you'd go first.
Sure.
And then I would have you pass it off to Bradley to Ryan. And in the meantime, I'm going to see if I can get some air flowing in this room.
Right.
Phil, thank you for being here.
Yeah,
appreciate
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Well, again, thank you guys for being here. I'm Phil Steiger. Again, I serve as Academic Dean for DSOM. And largely what that means is I help kind of coordinate some of the teacher side of things. And I help sometimes with grading off and on. And then we are often in the process of curriculum review. A lot of the texts and materials that we have been given have been in use for many years. And so sometimes there are better texts and there are materials that need to be edited. So I help with some of that, and so many of you actually through the years have kind of given me feedback on the text and the materials and so forth, which I always appreciate, because I'm not in every class and teaching every class and reading every book, but we want to know what's working out well for teachers and so forth. So that's just a little bit of my role, and so I've been asked to talk a little bit about what the teachers do, what the teachers are responsible for, what that weekend of teaching looks like. And so I want to talk also a little bit about some of our students. So RM DSOM is for those who need to complete their educational requirements for credentialing. So DSOM is not a high school level course, it's not a college level course. It's sort of right in between. But a little bit like Berean or Global University that some of you guys are already familiar with, DSOM allows students to finish the educational component for credentials. So the AG requires the educational component, and it requires an internship mentoring component, which dovetails with the DSOM work as well. So DSOM is designed in order for students, as they go through every year, they complete one level of credentials worth. So they just simply start certified, go to licensed, and then go to ordained. So if a student takes 3 years worth, they've got all their educational requirements in and done. RM DSOM is for lay people who are interested in filling out their biblical knowledge and ministry leadership. So plenty of our students don't want credentials, but a lot of our classes are geared toward biblical knowledge, geared toward ministry leadership, geared toward apologetics, you know, these kinds of things, general ministry knowledge. And so some of our students, a fair number of our students, are what we would call ministry leaders and lay leaders inside of the church, and they're taking these classes to beef up on what they know biblically and so forth. So RM DSOM dovetails with an internship program for the credential track students. So the internship track is something that is managed through Pastor Randy's office. Melanie Aragon acts as the admin for DSOM. So a lot of interaction with materials and student transcripts, that's going to go through Randy's office and Melanie Aragon. They help to maintain the internship side of things. But every year, between August and October, we are encouraging those students who are going for credentials to begin the mentoring process. They receive a packet. They have to take it to a local pastor, their pastor, someone nearby who agrees to be their mentor. And then through the rest of that calendar, that school year, they go through that mentoring process. So the idea is, if the student keeps up with it, by May, they will have finished both the educational requirement and the internship side of things. So teachers are not required to know the details of the internship track of things. We sort of handle that, but we want to make sure our teachers are aware that a lot of our students are doing both things simultaneously. Because oftentimes questions will come up, they need something done, or a question answered. And so we just want to make sure our teachers know that this is what some of the students are going through. It's not a college level class, but we do expect an adult post-high school level of education and achievement. So some of the materials are very accessible. And so folks who haven't been in school in a long time or not very comfortable with school, those texts will be relatively a nice entry point, easy for them to walk through. Some of the texts will be a couple of steps above that, are going to require a little bit of reaching. A lot of what we are educating are ministers and people getting credentials and so forth. So we do expect a certain level of, we're going to get stretched by this class or that class. So it's not college level, but you know, as we review curriculum and textbooks, we're trying to raise the bar every now and then in some of our classes. On any given weekend, so classes meet once a month for one day. We'll talk about that in a second. The students are expected to have read the text, completed a text overview, and be prepared for the final. Although with some of the technology, will some of that change on the day of teaching?
They'll still need to have done all of those things.
So when you show up with your students, they should have read through the text. The text overview is usually somewhere between 50 and 60 questions, and it literally walks them through the text. So they've finished the text overview. The final exam that the students take is lifted out of the text overview. So it's all designed to help them succeed in this class. And so that's what the students are expected to do, read, complete the text overview, and then 10% of their grade is a participation grade. We expect all our students to be there physically on the day of class once a month. So the teachers are expected to have read the text, prepared to walk through the text overview, although again some of the tech may alter that a little bit. Proctor the exam. We have a director at each location or someone who coordinates the location. But since we sometimes have two or three classes at a location, the teacher will be expected to proctor the exam if we're still doing proctor the exam. But the thing that I get most questions about most often are what we call the value-added teaching. So
This is just in-class materials. I'll talk about the value-added teaching here in a second. You'll be given a packet if you teach, and that packet contains the schedule for the day, contains some information. So you'll know when break time is, when lunchtime is, and all that sort of thing. And there'll be some materials back and forth between you guys and the students. If you produce extra materials for the students that you're teaching on, that'll be stuff that you guys are absolutely free to distribute amongst the students. So you'll be responsible for some of that. At the end of class, there's an evaluation form that we ask the students to fill out for the class experience itself and the teacher and the textbook. The site coordinator picks that stuff up. But anything else, you guys will be responsible for. So here's the question I get the most. What do you mean by value added? So here's often how it goes. You'll receive the textbook and the text overview. As you read through the text and you read through that text overview and you know the final's being lifted out of that text overview, you know what the students are paying attention to, what the students are intended to sort of pick up out of the text. What we then ask our teachers to do, and this is why we structure the teachers the way that we do, is that we want your educational and your ministry background to become a lot of what gets poured into these students. So the text they should already sort of have in their back pocket and ready to go. What's new in the class is you. What's new in the class is what you have to add to the class. So I'll often have teachers tell me they've read through the book, but they would really rather talk about these things that have to do with the topic but aren't necessarily in the book. Is it okay if I talk about these things? Well, actually, that's the point, is that if it dovetails with the class, it's part of the topic and issue, then yes, we definitely want you talking about that. We have a ministry ethics class. We have conflict management class. We have a Pentecostal theology class. These kinds of things that often we're comfortable with, but we have something extra to give to the students, and we want the students interacting with you guys and your ministry experience and your educational background. More often than not, these are students who don't have a lot of ministry experience themselves. They're probably in some level of volunteer ministry at church, or they're working their way into some form of associate ministry position, so they can really benefit from your experience, from our teachers' experience, and what you guys can pour into our students. I have also had teachers ask me, I read through the text and I disagree with X, Y, and Z. Is it okay if I do that with the students? And when I have that conversation, I'll ask the teacher, well, what is it that you disagree with? And let's think this through. And then more often than not, what I'm able to tell a teacher is, yeah, feel free to go ahead and present your position on this point of view or on this topic and so forth. As long as the students know what's going on here, if you do it in a charitable and thoughtful fashion. We have a class on evangelism, and we'll often ask pastors who we just kind of know either have a gift for that, or that's a lot of what they do inside of their church. So they'll come and they'll teach through the text, and they will tell me, Phil, this is not how we do it. This is not my philosophy. I say, that's fine. Make sure the students are prepped for the exam, they know their stuff, and then we want you pouring into their lives. So you tell your stories, you tell your philosophy, you talk about how you do it. So the value added is a really big deal, and in a lot of ways, that's why you guys are there, is to pour your experience into those students' lives. This is also significant in class time. We are actually accredited. So there's a National Association of District Schools of Ministries, and we receive a review, I think it's every 2 years from them, to make sure our curriculum is up to speed, our teaching is up to speed. So we have several standards that we have to meet every couple of years, and one of them is in-class teaching time. It's very easy from time to time to start at 8:45 and be done by noon, but we can't do that. We have to push ourselves, to that 2:30-ish time frame, and that makes sure that we're getting enough in-class time with our students. It's good anyway to do that, but then it also makes sure that our accreditation is up to snuff and up to speed. So that's the nutshell of my side of some of our teacher expectations. Do you guys have any quick questions before we move on to some of the grading technology and so forth?
Phil, me just walking in and out here, did you address anything about the teacher evaluations?
Just very briefly. So at the end of class, the students are given that evaluation form, teacher text, and class itself. We pick those up, and Melanie Aragon actually collects and compiles those teacher evaluations.
We're wanting to, just to ensure the integrity of people feeling the liberty to be truthful and transparent with us, we're just simply asking that the teacher not be the one, if you're up there receiving them, and they know that they turn around and all they got to do is flip it over and see what you've said about them, you know, that's going to keep our students from being transparent. And obviously, we're just wanting to do this in such a way that I read those. And basically now I'm doing the selection of the teachers, and that's influential on selection for classes. And so we just really want to give those students the opportunity to present those.
So we just have the students hand it to the site administrator?
Yes, please.
So there, instead of your teacher, you'll have your, you know, the tech person or the site administrator. So just on your way out, basically the same place where you used to turn in your text overviews, the kids give that, the students give that to the site administrator now, who will package it all up and mail it in.
Excellent. Well, just to make sure we have enough time, I'll go ahead and pass it off to Bradley.
Thanks, Phil. What a great reminder of how important you guys are. And this is an exciting time that we live in to be able to communicate in such a way to train up leaders all over from one site. And so I get the privilege to talk a little bit about the technology that we are putting in place. Our technology is going very quickly, and so we want to keep up with that and make every possible availability for those who at different sites want to get on board with having a district school of ministry have that capability while still maintaining the intimacy of a classroom environment. We know that when it comes to teachers, what you're doing is imparting yourself to your students. And through that, when we start adding a component like technology, we want to make sure that that still carries over. This is not something that we want people to feel like is just a clickable online course, but something that they're interacting with you as an instructor who can not only see them, but care for them. Not only can hear them, but answer them. And so with that, I just wanted to bring out a few points of where we're going. We did change our platform recently, which went from a GoToMeeting to Zoom. We've had some great success as far as that's concerned. Previously, we had a lot of tech issues running back and forth, making sure that the connections were there. Thankfully, with the streamlined opportunity with Zoom, a lot of those issues have been resolved. And now comes in to play, how is it that as instructors, you can communicate the best way to the students? So I've five things I'd like to share with you, one of which can break down a little bit. The first is bridging the social barriers. Even as I'm talking to you right now, I have the privilege of making eye contact, I'm making gestures. There are things that I'm doing, not only in what I'm saying, but in the way that I'm communicating to you that can be robbed if we're in front of a camera. And so there's ways that you can get through those social barriers. And if any of you have either interacted with some of our teachers before, or you yourself were teaching, you know that when you have people in front of you, it's a totally different element than having someone on a screen. But there's still ways that through our communication we can reach them in a good way. So getting through some of those social barriers, one of the best things you can do to put a personal touch when we have venues from Denver, Salt Lake, Grand Junction, Colorado Springs, Pagosa Springs, is let the student know that you actually care about their name. One of the best ways to get a hold of them is to figure out what their name is and utilize that through the time. I know that we've had different classrooms at different times where as the instructor is getting into it, they really are engaged with the first half, but maybe not so much with those who are in other areas. By learning the names of every student, it goes a long, long way. Calling on students at different locations. One of the big things that we have with the Zoom platform is a capability for a student in one location, when they're speaking, it will change the camera to whoever's speaking. And so that gives the instructor the ability to see, oh, okay, we're having someone talk, and it will zoom in on that classroom. And you'll be able to know who's talking from that whole classroom. That's an opportunity. So use that to your advantage. When you're teaching, you can actually call out a question in a different location, and rather than being worried about, well, who's answering, it'll bring it up on the screen. And so that'll give you an interaction point that will be very beneficial in connecting with those students. Another opportunity in that would be for asking your remote location for questions specifically. Sometimes there can be a fight a conflict if you have two different sites trying to talk at the same time. Well, what's going on? As the teacher, this adds an element for you to be able to say, okay, how about let's have Colorado Springs say a word, and now we have some clarity there, and they'll be able to talk. So that's one social barrier to get through. And since you're the teacher, you'll have that kind of control. When you when you're dealing with certain issues, obviously, as you've heard a couple of the classes that come up, these are some very important classes talking about issues that are going to be paramount in ministry. And so with that, it's going to take a student some time to kind of digest that. Maybe actually isolate a class and say, I want to hear from Grand Junction. Talk amongst yourself. Why don't you tell us how you're interacting with this? That would be a fantastic way to do it. One thing you do want to avoid is allowing everyone to have side conversations on their own. If you, as your physical class, are having a side conversation and they in their class are having the side conversation, you might lose control of what's going on. You want the whole group to feel part of the conversation. And as the instructor, using cues, that's huge. So these are a few examples of ways that, as teachers, you can communicate and break down the social barriers of having a broadcast in, but still feeling like you're an intimate part of the class. Okay, another big thing to think about. Recognize that as we are doing broadcasts, there are some key things that are going to be different. Now, if any of you have gotten into the live streaming, maybe of a service or at a satellite location, some of this might just be review for you. But when you have to start thinking about little things that make a big difference. Clothing, that's a big one. Cameras nowadays have all kinds of features to focus in on the face. They have different features to change the contrast ratio to give a better picture. And therefore, when it comes to the way that you dress, that can have a huge impact on what the student is seeing. Now, I'm no film major or anything like that, but I know of a few things like the Moray effect, where you have small lines that a camera can't figure out and will actually blur, making you have a really cool look as far as your shirt, but it could also be very distracting. Making sure that your clothing is not too contrasted, having a serious dark and a serious light, which creates a almost angelic effect, which may be something that you're going for. Maybe not the same approach in being able to communicate. That might just be on that great shirt or whatever. So wearing subtle clothing that's not high in contrast, wearing clothing that's not all one dark feature that actually blends the contrast completely out, or and vice versa, completely light. I know that might be silly things to talk about, but at the same point, when we're getting these broadcasted, those are features that can take away from a student paying attention. I mean, many of you know as communicators that when you start losing attention, it's a bad deal. And so our attention spans already have difficulties. So when we can do and go the extra mile to make sure that those things don't happen, it really makes a huge, huge difference. Knowing your microphone. Oh, this one's a big one. Knowing your microphone. you know, many of us are in a position where we speak consistently. Maybe some not so consistently. But you do know if that mic is not in the right place, it can really affect whether someone can even receive what you're saying. Know where a mic should be, know how to communicate with a mic. I know that we've been working with lapels. In addition with that, we've been working with omnidirectional mics on webcams, things like that. Knowing your position and how to talk, that's hugely important. And to add more, and I hope I'm not overwhelming you with all this, I just want to give you some good things here. When it comes to a camera, we've seen it before where the instructor will walk off camera. the other students can't see you. Your one class might be able to see you, but if all they can see is the side of your shoulder, has a huge effect on their interaction with you. So paying attention to the clothing that you're wearing, where your mic's positioning is, and also where the camera is, huge. Now I want to say a few good things before I finish the next few points here. Our technology is increasing, and we are doing all that we can to make every DSOM experience better and better and better. And so with that, we have a huge privilege that I'm really grateful for. We're going to host in a Friendship Assembly, and we're putting in a lot of technology to make this even better, so that not only those who are in the classroom get a great experience, but those who are tuning in will also have a huge experience as well that is good. As our technology gets better and better, our DSOM classes are going to get better and better. And we've already seen that progression taking place so far. We're in conversations about even bringing on other platforms that make the grading even more exciting and efficient, and even communication. So these are big things that we're pushing forward in, and I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be really good. Ground rules for communication. That is a big thing. You know that you want interaction from everyone. And so right up front, establish the ground rules. Sometimes you're going to have connections that might go in and out internet-wise and may make it difficult for people. So when it comes to maybe cueing your students for a question, a great idea is to say, if you have a question, show me by raising your hand first. I know that might seem a little simple and possibly elementary, but when we're dealing with several locations and you might have drops in and out, a physical gesture goes a long way in knowing that someone wants to interact with you. So establish those ground rules up front. It's huge. It's huge. Making certain materials that you plan to distribute accessible. This is where Melanie is incredibly, incredibly important. There are all kinds of creative ways that we push information to students so that they can have good interaction with the content. Maybe you have a PowerPoint, maybe you have slides, maybe you have extra material you want to distribute. If you can get that to Melanie, Melanie will make sure that it gets to the classroom of everyone. And I'm telling you, it is such a big deal when they have, as a student, something in their hands or even something on their own that they can look at. Be creative with this and make sure that it's funneled through the right source so that everybody has the same material. That's really important. Okay, last one I've got. Be cognizant of forms of communication that drive things home. I'm a mover. I love moving. I love making big gestures like this, and sometimes that has a huge impact on how people receive what I say. But when you have a camera, some of those things can be easily lost. So keep that in mind. What are the communication strong points of how you teach? And think about how those will interact over a video camera, over a mic. Some things are really powerful in person, but may not be so powerful across multiple sites. So tailor those things. Think about those things. A great way to test this is to take hold of maybe a cell phone and record yourself in something that you do. Take a 5-minute snip and then watch it and see, okay, how did that work? Did the gestures that I normally use, did that communicate well? Did my voice elevation or drop communicate well over a video? So those are simple things that will go a long way in making sure that the broadcast goes even further and that those who are tuning in from multiple sites are able to get the most out of who you are. So those are just a few things. I have all of these available and would love to give it to you in a point-by-point basis, because I know I covered a lot of ground right here. And so those would be good things to think about. We'll make sure to get that out if you're interested in that. With all those things being said, are there any questions as far as the technology may be concerned? Yes?
You're teaching a class in Grand Junction. Can you see the other classrooms in Pagosa Springs or Gulf?
Yes. Yes, you can.
You can see those students.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. Yes.
Wow.
And another exciting thing about that is not only can you see them, but you can have your own PowerPoint with your notes visible where they can't see the notes but see the PowerPoint. And that's very important for an instructor.
Bradley, explain the monitor.
Yes. Oh, great. Okay. So we have kits that we have assembled that have everything that a teacher will need as far as broadcasting them with a mic, and on the back of those kits a little flat screen that they can either use for the PowerPoint or they can use just for monitoring the class. Some instructors enjoy bringing in their own laptop because some people like Mac over PC. I'm personally a PC fan all the way, and so some people who have a Mac say, well, can I just use my laptop to use the PowerPoint? We can facilitate that. But when an instructor is on a platform, all of the classrooms that have logged in and are part of that breakout room are visible to the instructor on the left-hand side. And they can be altered based on how the instructor wants to see them. So if they want them larger, if they want them off to the side. I know some of our instructors like them along the top, others like them along the panel on the side. Some like them full range if they have another laptop that they're working with for their PowerPoint. So yes, they can see them. And from the Zoom platform, when a student from a certain location speaks, it will come up on the main portion of the screen for the instructor to see. That's a new benefit with the new platform Zoom that we didn't have previously. So, excellent question.
Are we going to be able to, so I taught one recently with the technology, I think, and the main problem we had was when I was interacting with the students, it's fine to hear the classrooms from the other locations, but my own location, the other locations couldn't hear the classroom. That makes sense? So like they were interacting, giving answers.
I see.
And so I had to repeat. And so would there be a way to video conference that local classroom?
So that your classroom might hear better than what you hear on that personal level. Is that
the so the other classrooms.
So for the other classrooms. Classroom. So like Grand Junction can hear where if I was in Salt Lake, my classroom's answering the questions. But in the Grand Junction can't really hear.
Well, that's an excellent point. Yes, we can. We can add an extra mic.
An extra mic.
No, I'm sorry, not an extra mic, an extra speaker, so that they can hear that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would be a mic.
It would be a mic. Yeah.
So the problem is, you're the speaker in Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. You've got your lapel mic that picks you up really well, but it doesn't pick up the interaction of your classroom really well. Yeah. So if I'm answering a question that you just asked, and you're in Grand Junction right here, Darren, who's in Salt Lake, can't hear me. And Phil, who's in Colorado Springs, can't hear me very well. So you're having to repeat what I'm saying so that the other locations can hear.
That is an excellent point. Yes, we can do something about that. Absolutely. Yeah, we can set up a small, yep, you bet. That's a great feedback right there. I get to walk away with something.
Yeah, good.
All right.
What about the development of PowerPoint? I know just a personal pet peeve of mine with PowerPoint is when there's a square screen on a high-def television.
Oh, yes. Let's please address this. Okay, so when it comes to PowerPoint, especially if you're accessing PowerPoint possibly on a Mac versus a PC, there are certain resolutions that you need to be aware of under the Format tab. And definitely, I would encourage you as best as you can to go 16:9, not 4:3. And the reason being, even if you're dealing with some kind of 4:3, I don't know where you would deal with that, but I don't think you would. It's possible. I'll put it out there, it's possible. But you got to remember, when you're broadcasting that, it's in a 4:3 and actually limits the view of those who are using it from another location or seeing it from another location. Use a 16:9 format. And you'll find that in your PowerPoint options in your format, under your Format tab, and then you can change that. So yes, please, the 4:3 does make it difficult because it condenses everything. And that's important to make sure you have done beforehand.
And because many of our classes and the class materials, again, were given to us and developed years and years and years ago, it's in that old square TV format, which is the 4:3. So that's why it's important over time to change it to this kind of letterbox, the 16:9. It just helps visibility, and yeah.
So just kind of dovetailing on this, we're moving away from those old ones because the old PowerPoints were basically PowerPoints of text overviews. Ryan's going to be addressing that in his part next. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to go back to your first statement about using people's names in the classrooms. Mm-hmm. Melanie will provide for all of you that are teaching, she will provide for you the list of names that are here in Grand Junction, separate list of who's in Salt Lake for your specific class. So you'll have everyone's names right there. Now, obviously, you need to put a name with a face, and however you do that at the early part when you're maybe doing a class introduction, whatever notes you need to make, you know, red shirt or whatever, you know, just help so that you can use the student's name. That's an excellent point.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I have a question about when you lose connection and you need to reconnect. We used to have a website or something that we just went to, and this last time we had to wait for somebody over there to reconnect us.
Yes, that was a unique situation.
Okay.
That is no longer in place. So what we do have currently, which has been a feature that's been pretty good, we have one ID number. We used to have three. Now we have one. One ID number for everyone to log into. That ID number will not change unless something catastrophic happens and we give that out at least 3 days prior or whenever we can if there is that ID change. One room. Everyone goes to one room. And in that opportunity, if there is a announcement or things that need to be spoken of beforehand, everyone's getting it. And then after that, we break you off into three breakout rooms: certified, licensed, and ordained. And so currently what's happened in the past outside of our last session, that was a unique session, is when you lose connection and come back, you go into one room and then you have an option from the breakout rooms where to go. So if you're certified, there's a certified breakout room. If you're licensed breakout, and so on. This last time we had a waiting room that we had to give access and permission. That's been removed. So
okay.
That's no longer an issue this time.
Good.
But excellent point. All right, I know that's a lot of ground. Is there any other questions?
You talk about the frame and clothing and contrast.
Yes.
How much of a person is framed? To the tips of my fingers, my belt, my hair, and what?
Now
just my face?
You hold the camera right here.
Yeah, just the lovely part. No, right now, currently, we usually have it from the waist up, and it just depends on the placement of the kit. And you can see that from the little screen that we have, and so you can get your little close up and see what you like. But right now it is that letterbox format, and so you will have...
It's somewhat determined by the room you're teaching from, so location to location will be a little different because where the outlets are and where we set the kit up and
yes.
Where the right camera angle is obviously different from room to room. But yeah, you'll be able to tell right away when you walk in. You can see yourself, so you'll be able to tell what the students are going to be able to see of you.
And that is something that you want to get exposure to right before so that you know where to go. And if you want to have that authoritative, put the camera down here.
Yeah, definitely. I would say that just take a look at what others are going to see. Just look at it and just pay attention. That I don't want to look up your nostril, okay? So if the camera's too low, you know, it's like just make the adjustment, you know, to where this thing is kind of looking at you and kind of close in.
That's excellent. Right. Well, if there's no other questions, thank you for your time and take it away, Ryan.
All right. So a couple of those questions actually started touching on the things I was going to talk about here. So. Let me go back and address one of the things that we're talking about here. So when you are, how many of you guys have taught for us before? Okay, so one of the significant changes that we're going to be making moving forward starting in August is, Bradley kind of mentioned this new grading platform. What's going to happen is the students are going to fill out their text overviews before class in an online format. That is going to automatically grade them for them. So instead of now when you come into class, the first, you know, all the way to lunchtime, so the first 4 hours of class is spent going through the text overview, and your students are wondering, did I get credit for that question? How right or wrong is this question? You know, all that kind of stuff. We're doing away with all of that. So they're now going to be answering primarily multiple choice questions from the text before they get to class. As soon as they enter those questions in, we're basically going to format it in like chapter quizzes now. as soon as they enter that information and submit the quiz, they'll know their grade right away. They'll be able to tell what they got right and wrong, which means they can study for the test before they ever get to the class. We're going to move the test period all the way up to the beginning of the class time now. So when the students come into class, you'll give them an opportunity if they have any specific questions. You know, you will have read the textbook, and so give them an opportunity. Hey, did you guys have any questions on the text? Anything that wasn't really clear? You'll have a copy of the test, so you can actually go ahead, and I would recommend you look at that, you know, look that over beforehand, before the day you get there. Melanie will send all that information to you. So you'll have a copy of the test, you can ask the students, hey, any questions, you know, and then you'll be able to kind of guide them. Obviously, we're not giving them answers to the test, right? But you can kind of guide them with, this is the, you know, the way you need to be thinking about that, or this is what you need to be paying attention to in that discussion, or what have you there. So what that changes for us is about 3.5 hours worth of material. So as Pastor Phil was talking about the value-added portion, traditionally what happened, you'd come in, you'd do your review of the text overview, we'd give them the test, we'd break for lunch, and we'd come back for like 1.5 to 2 hours after the test, and that was your value-added portion. Now, with us taking the test right up at the beginning, essentially the entire class is value-added. So this is really going to enhance our ability as teachers to really dive deep in some of these areas. And as Pastor Phil said, the reason that you're selected for this class is because somebody out there, you know, between Phil, who's the dean, and my dad's office there, believes that you have something of value to add to these students and to teach these future ministers, right? So that's what we're asking you to do. Read through the textbooks so you understand kind of where they're coming from, what, you know, what they've just been reading, learning, studying. But if you want to come from the text and address some things in the text, you're welcome to do that. If you want to do nothing on the text, they've already read it, they've been quizzed on it, and they've just taken a test on it. So go ahead and feel free. If you've got other material you want to give to them and teach them, do it. With that, we used to send you the PowerPoints of the text overview and stuff, and those were always really old and had other people's names on them and stuff, and we had a handful of times when teachers didn't adjust the PowerPoint, and so the students are standing there, you know, and it says, Life of Christ by Bradley Williamson, and I'm teaching the class, you know, and it's not in the right format, and there are typos and all that. No more. None of that stuff. So when you produce your own PowerPoint, and we recommend that you do, because you have the ability to share your screen with all the other classes. So what the other classes are going to see is your face and your screen, and that will be in every classroom. They've got, you know, a classroom of this size would have at least a screen of this size in every class that we're dealing with, unless a student is sitting at a table with a laptop right in front of them, which we do have, like in Pagosa and a handful of locations, so they can see it clearly. So go ahead and feel free to make PowerPoint presentations for what you want to speak on. We highly encourage that you do that to take advantage of the screen space that they're going to have. But when you do that, make it at that proper widescreen format. You know, create it at a 16:9. If you don't know what that means, that's fine. Contact Bradley or Melanie at the network office. Send us a copy of your PowerPoint before, you know, you teach, if you're worried about that. And we're happy to look over it and teach you how to create a PowerPoint that looks nice.
Big font.
Big fonts are nice, you know. There's no one's ever complained, I don't think, yet, of the words are too big. I can read them too easily, and it's too easy to follow along with your presentation. Next time, you know, try and enhance the difficulty a little bit on me. No. Next thing I want to say, kind of along the technical side of this, is we welcome you bringing your own equipment with some limits. So over the 4 years we've been doing the DSOM, we've had everything from brand new Apple laptops to
they're not even appropriate to call them laptops anymore, you know, the giant bricks that are still running like Windows Vista or something like that. You know, it takes 15 minutes for it to turn on and start up and get everything going. No offense if you guys have those computers at all, but there are some limitations on what we're able to prepare for, because your tech person at your location, wherever you're teaching, has some equipment to help get you set up, but they're going to be limited, right, within reason. So if you're teaching in Colorado Springs, Bradley's your tech guy.
Yes.
You know, if you're in Denver, I'm your tech guy there. So if you show up with a laptop that only has a VGA connection, and all we've got is HDMI connections here, you know, we can't use your laptop to, you can't assume that we can just use your laptop. Now, over the years, we've accumulated a bin full of connections. We have the ability to connect everything to everything. We could probably find a way to display that clock on this TV if we needed to.
So needed.
But that's primarily in this Colorado Springs location that we've been accumulating this kind of stuff. So especially if you're teaching in Denver, Grand Junction, Salt Lake, I highly recommend, if you can get your computer connected to an HD TV, then you're probably good. Okay? So, and some of them come with various things, right? This one requires a DisplayPort adapter. We've got those. So the question is just, can we connect your computer to a TV? If the answer to that is not yes, or is I don't know, then check with us before you just show up Saturday morning. 90% of our technical issues that we've had in the 4 years of doing DSOM comes from, we've got the class set up, the cameras are working just fine, we just can't figure out how to get the teacher's PowerPoint displayed for all of the students, because they showed up with some weird version of PowerPoint that, you know, was a trial version from the late 90s or something like that, that Microsoft forgot to remind you needed to pay for, or some weird thing, right? So about 90% of our technical issues come from the equipment the teacher brings into the classroom. So like I said, again, you have any questions about anything, the best thing to do is contact Bradley Williamson, and we'll give you everybody's emails here at the end. Yeah.
With your new formats, mm-hmm. are you providing the laptop in every room that's already connected for that teacher to use? So if we just bring a thumb drive with PowerPoint?
If you bring a thumb drive, yeah, so good. That I meant to say that. So you either bring your laptop with all your stuff on it or bring a thumb drive. So if you've got PowerPoint that you want to use and you just want to bring a flash drive with your, you know, the newest PowerPoint, not, you know, don't go with any of those old versions of PowerPoint, but just your newest version of PowerPoint. If you create it on a Mac, make sure all of the stuff that we do is PC. So we're using Microsoft Surface tablets. Yeah. So you need to have something that can work on a PC.
Does USB fit into a Microsoft?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
And we have a handful of adapters and things like that too. So bring it on a flash drive, a couple PowerPoint presentations on a flash drive, and we can load that up. And most of our locations have remotes for you too, so you can just use a remote to click through your PowerPoint. So there's a handful of that stuff that we try and provide for you as best we can. Again, if you have any questions about any of that, contact Bradley. Preferably not like the day before, but like give him like a week.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You know?
Are we good to go in all five of our locations that if someone were to bring a thumb drive that we've got what's needed at
Brent,
all five locations?
Is that
Yes, is the simplest answer to that question. The kits are mainly stationed in Colorado Springs, so and you've got one in Utah, right?
Yes,
we've got one in Salt Lake.
Salt Lake.
And then we've got an extra one in Colorado Springs that we will ship out. So if there's a teacher in Denver, I'll usually just bring the kits up myself. But if there's a teacher in Grand Junction or in Pagosa, we'll mail your location a kit. So it'll have that Surface tablet. They've got really nice HD cameras, excellent, like phenomenal microphones, lapel mics. And it's all, Bradley's assembled it all, so it all sits on a tripod. So everything is in one piece. It's pretty remarkable if you haven't seen these kits. We've had people just buy a kit.
That's true.
I want this for my church. They're pretty good little pieces of equipment that we've got that work well in most locations. Any other questions on the technical side of teaching?
Can you briefly elaborate on the exam coming from the quizzes?
Yeah, so now our chapter quizzes, the tests are gonna be pulled right from those questions. Now, the question may be worded slightly differently, but the chapter quizzes are gonna be multiple choice. We found a free platform that will automatically grade these. We'll enter in the information and the correct answer, and all the student has to do is go online and they punch in, you know, their answers and hit submit, and it'll, you know, punch out a grade for them right there. And then what we'll do is we'll lift those questions for the exam. We may word the question a little bit differently so that it fits really well on the exam. But for the most part, by and large, it's going to come just literally straight off the chapter quizzes. So what you can tell the students is when you take those quizzes, you are studying for the test. This is the test. And so in the past, that's why we've spent we've had such a large emphasis on walking through the text overview, because that's where their test comes from. And you know, students, they always want to know, is this going to be on the test? You know, and so that's why we've spent that time going through the text overviews. This is going to free up a handful of things. I personally hand grade every single text overview every month. There are usually around 30 of them. We have about 30 students on a regular basis. So I'm going through 30, 50 question text overviews where a lot of students will just put like a paragraph down, or they'll handwrite their answers in. You know, we get all kinds of crazy things. So I'm not gonna have to do that anymore. So this is fantastic for me, and then for you guys as teachers, and you get to teach the entire time. So now you can make this class what you want. You can really put your stamp on it and let your personality and your ministry experience and your knowledge come through, and you can really invest a lot into these students in that way. Did you have a question? No? Okay. So you've got something.
I'll wrap up.
Okay. So on the value added portion, I just want to speak a personal note. So I also teach a handful of these classes. And do you mind if I just share your story that you just shared with me? So Bill here, getting licensed tonight. And right?
Yep.
No news that you needed to let him. Okay.
Oh boy.
He stopped in one of our classes. He just dropped in. And he didn't know if this was for him or not. He decided to audit it. And you heard of it through your church? Or where did you find out about DSOM?
Oh, I don't remember where I found out.
Okay.
But I called the office.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they said, yes, I could just go sit in.
Yeah, so we have that audit option. Yeah, and so he shows up in the class, and I was teaching that class, and he told me, hey, I'm just here to observe and see if this is something I want to do. And he walked out of that class that night, and he told his wife, I'm in, I'm doing this. He finished his license class, or certified classes. He finished his license level classes, and he's about to finish his ordination level classes, and tonight he's getting licensed. So this is real. Like, these people actually are going through this process and getting credentialed. So you're teaching future ministers here in the Rocky Mountain Ministry Network. A lot of times you're teaching guys and gals who are actually involved in ministry currently, right now. So your student base could be somebody who's brand new to even the faith and wants to learn a little bit more, all the way through somebody who's actively involved and engaged in ministry in some form in their church. And so what we're mostly looking for is the kind of information that all of us would look at and say, man, they never taught me that. You know, it's, I wish someone had told me this. Man, if only I could have spent 5 hours listening to somebody who's just got a heart for the lost, teaching me how to evangelize. Like, that's what this is. That's what you guys are. And that's what DSOM is this opportunity for these students to grab this. This is not a 15-week long university level course, right? Where we expect them to walk out of here and then be able to teach that class to everyone. So the question you ask yourself is, if I've got 5 hours with someone who's coming to this class and investing their time and energy and wants to learn how to do this, what do I have to communicate to them that will help them become the best they can be in whatever it is, whatever class that you're having, that you're teaching? Did you have a question?
I did have a question, because yeah, you said you could go through your accredited and licensor and ordination. Sounded like back to back. But I thought there was something that you had to wait a year before you could do ordination.
So, yes. So, you can, once you finish your certified level and you finish the internship, then you can apply for your certification. And you can receive that, you receive it at council, but you can apply for that year round. There's no time limit between going from that to your license. So, you can immediately start taking your license classes the following year and go through all those license classes, do your internship as well, and apply for your license. If you want to wait and just apply for your license, you can do that too. You can skip the certified and go straight to the license once you get all the classes and both internships done. Once you have your license, you need to have it for 2 years before you can be ordained. So he's finishing up his last ordained classes here coming up this next month. But by receiving his license now, he'll be eligible. He's now met, after this next month, he will meet the educational requirements for ordination. But all the regular rules on credentialing still apply. Okay. So you'll be able to apply for your ordination in 2020, or you know, late 2019, as you go through the process to be ordained at council in 2020.
We try to reiterate with our students that DSOM only meets the educational requirements. Every once in a while, we have someone who's completed a track, whether it's certified, license, or ordination, that believes at the completion of the last class that they will receive that credential. DSOM provides the educational requirement. There are other requirements for credentials. There's a separate application, a separate exam that's apart from DSOM. And so we're doing our best to communicate that with students, but it's good for all of you as teachers just to know that. A couple really quick points I want to make, just kind of based on what I've heard here. Bradley was kind of offering point by point notes and said, if you're interested in this, what we'll do is we'll get his notes. And since I have your names, we will send you an email of Bradley's notes point by point in case you weren't able to keep up writing all of those. If you did not sign the notebook, if you came in after this, went around, make sure you come up and sign up on this, because I'm going to be working off of this list. Ryan made one point that sometimes is just assumed, and that is read the textbook. Mm-hmm. We actually had a teacher stand up in front of the class and started off by saying, you know, I didn't have a chance to read the textbook. And it's like, no, don't. I mean, first of all, if that happens, please don't admit it. And but second, we really do have this expectation that if you're going to teach this course, the students have been asked and expected to read the textbook. We don't think that we're asking too much to expect our teachers to read the textbook.
Just clarify that when it comes to the theology textbook, that the first class only covers the first 10 chapters.
Yes.
The teacher doesn't have to push through the whole textbook.
It may not be bad.
I have a question about the requirements for teachers, because when you first started, you had to have a degree and be licensed one level above what you're teaching? Is that still the case?
We'd love to have people that have any higher education degrees. Those kind of get kind of rise to the top.
Okay.
The Association of District Schools requires of us that anyone that we put before our classes, that they at least have the next credential above, unless you're teaching the ordination, and then you have to have ordination. But if you're teaching certified, you need license. If you're teaching license, ordination, and same with ordination. I mentioned to you on the evaluations that we want those to be collected by the site director and not the teacher. But if you ever want to know, email me. I don't just freely offer that information to all of the teachers, but any teacher that wants to know, I'll make copies of every one of the evaluations and email that to you. That can be very helpful just to see what students are saying about you. One of the points that was made is whenever there's shared materials, like if you're coming to class and you have a handout, do make sure that you're not coming to class and only your class gets the handout. Okay, again, we had this circumstance, this situation happened to us, and you've got four other classes that are just scratching their head thinking, what did they get that we don't get? So obviously, we need you to go into this realizing that you're speaking beyond your class to maybe four other classes if there are students in all four. Yes, Rob?
So that standard now that all classes are going to be broadcast, because I know the first class that I taught, I went in, I had no idea there was going to be a class in Grand Junction watching me. The cameras were barely set up. I had 15 people in this extremely small space, and I'm stuck between here and the wall, and so they're just kind of getting this view on me. But I'm like, so I had no idea I was going to be teaching the other class. Everyone, you'll know in advance.
Yes.
We're okay.
Yeah, you as a teacher will know how many students you have in each of the other locations, right, and you'll have their names.
So you can email it out to them.
Yes. And I would encourage you, honestly, I mean, just teachers that are connecting and teachers that are getting these high scores on these evaluations are teachers that have some level of communication with the student before class starts. We'll give you email addresses, names, so guys, it's kind of on you.
But on that note, though, kind of your question, so if you've got extra materials, send it to Melanie.
Yes, yes.
Melanie in advance, because Melanie communicates with each site director.
I think it was the last minute thing, that teacher didn't show up. So that night,
yeah,
it wasn't.
No, and that's fine.
Yeah. I just wanted to. Second time I taught, I wasn't broadcast anywhere, so I was.
Yeah, there are times that, with us only having 25, 30 students in five locations, that one of the classes may only have students in your class only.
Can we send them some prep work before we come in for the bell?
Yes, you can.
Because I'm those things I just wasn't sure if I did have my classes. I wasn't sure if that was okay or not.
So you can do that. I tried that with a class 2 months ago and Melanie got inundated with complaint. This is so foreign to us and completely new, and why would anyone expect I do extra work outside? No. I'm paraphrasing the complaints. So what the students have commented is, if you're going to have extra materials, try and have that available by the time registration opens for that class. So that when Melanie opens registration for the class, if you're giving them extra stuff, like a handout that they're going to walk through, just get that to Melanie the week before your class. If you have that extra assignment that you want them to do, for instance, I'm teaching this class next month, and I had an extra assignment that I wanted all the students to do. I sent that to Melanie so that when she opened the class for registration, that assignment is a part of what Melanie sends to everyone when they register. So that someone isn't registered, they're all the way through their class, they think they've done everything, and then two nights before they realize, wait, there's this extra assignment I never even saw because it came in some separate email. So if you've got extra stuff that you want the students to do before class, the class is open, she tries to open them
just shy of 2 months in advance.
Yeah, a couple months in advance. Guys, I know we've gone over time. Chuck?
Okay, a quick dumb question. Who's Melanie and how do you get in touch with
her? Melanie is the assistant that works in my office, Secretary Treasurer's office. And it's real easy. Melanie, let's go with M. Aragon, A-R-A-G-O-N, at rmdc.org. Yep, right here. Okay, I saw another hand, Deborah.
Yes, how far in advance would you know if you're asked to teach?
Good question. I will have everything selected from August, September, October, November, December, by the end of May. Okay? So at the end of May, I will have made all the teacher assignments. Okay? And so please, I really don't want someone to feel like, man, I came to the class, he didn't select me. This is helpful having this information today. There is no reason that I have in my mind today that I would not call upon any one of you to teach. Okay? But just don't take it personal if that doesn't happen. Okay? We're all good on this. You know, I don't want people to get offended at me because, you know, I didn't select you when there's someone else that I selected for the course that you were interested in. Okay, if you did not sign, please do so. Sorry for keeping you late, but thank you guys for coming and being a part of this.